This is With Dignity, the story of Casey House, episode 4. In 2003, June Callwood was diagnosed with cancer. She didn't want any treatment, and 4 years later, in 2007, she knew she was nearing the end.
Well, June was one of a kind. Kindness was June's middle name, really. If you talked about religion, she would say, "I believe in kindness."
In her last interview, given days before she died, she said to George Strombolopoulos, "I believe in kindness. I think it's very communicable."
If more people had that as their philosophy of life, we'd be in a better position than we are now.
June said, "Strangers hold doors for one another in the downtown area, always, almost always."
June was really clear on there was no not holding the door open for strangers in our family.
Great consideration for one another. That's what's going to save the world. Bree Fitzgerald.
I remember asking June one time when I was very small about sin, like somebody had been talking about it at school, and like I came home and was asking her what that is, and she taught me the word apathy. You know, and at the time, I just was like, okay, so now I have the definition for sin. But as an adult, I think that's really clever.
Even in her last days, she was still pushing for change, holding people to do better for one another. Guy Bethel, whose beautiful love story we talked about in the last episode, was in politics. And he said he got a call from a mutual friend of his and June's who wanted him to make a connection. June, from her deathbed in Princess Margaret Hospital, wanted to speak to Ontario Premier Dalton McGuinty about a social policy proposal. He got her Madeleine Mayer, the sitting Minister of Community and Social Services, instead.
And indeed, that's what happened. And I believe Madeleine actually visited June at Princess Margaret.
In her last days, Dalton McGuinty came to see her and had signed off on child poverty. He was telling her that he was committed to that. And she held him to it. She said, okay, so this is my deathbed. Like, I mean, it was really, she was like, you don't come to someone's deathbed and not figure this out.
This was all about what eventually became the Ontario Child Benefit. And, you know, what this says is just, you know, right up until the end of her life, and even when she was in Princess Margaret, she was still advocating for the underprivileged, for the vulnerable.
McGuinty's promise to June didn't come through as much as I'm sure she'd hoped, but she was still working right up until the end.
In the last couple of weeks, she was really, glad to go. She was done, and I think she was grateful to cancer in a way. She wouldn't have stopped any other way, you know. So when she got the diagnosis, she didn't do much about it. She just let that cancer do whatever it was going to do.
She wanted to hurry it up. She said to me one day, she said, "I need a push." She had enough. She was ready to go.
And I think that's maybe what happens when you've done everything that you feel that you can do and you're really ready to go. I don't think that there's much regret for her.
On April 14th of 2007, June Callwood passed away. Later that week, a candlelit procession was held in her honor.
And so there were thousands of people. There was a march. It started at Jesse's on Parliament, and about 2,000 of us walked up to Casey House.
CBC's Michael Enright had written a tribute to June for a birthday fundraiser years earlier. But it feels like a perfect tribute to who she was and the giant shoes that she left behind. Here's Linda reading Michael Enright's words.
He wrote, "When the end of the world comes, I shall kick the dog, turn on a video of Going My Way, and drink a large glass of Glenmorangie malt whiskey. June Callwood, on the other hand, will write a protest letter to the Globe and Mail, phone the Prime Minister, brackets, she'll get through, organize a working committee, and march on Queen's Park, all before lunch on the final day. While the rest of us are tidying up our affairs and bringing in the lawn furniture, June Callwood will write a 5,000-word magazine piece, raise money for a billboard campaign against the end of the world, and plan a cultural exchange with Russian peace protesters. These will knock a large hole in her lunch plans. People will say to her throughout the day, "By the way, June, the end of the world is nigh, you know." This will put a fierce glint in her eye, and she will say back at them, "Then it's by God time we did something about it." Anyway, in the evening on the day of the end of the world, she will take time out for a candlelight dinner with her husband, a man old enough to be her uncle from the Boer War. She will then fly to Winnipeg for a fundraiser. It's my guess that all this activity will serve to put off the end of the world to another time. People have gone bankrupt betting that June wouldn't be able to accomplish something or other. It may be years until the end of the world, or it may be next Tuesday. Whenever it comes, it is comforting to know we will have June around to stop it. So if you have somebody like that at the helm, what can you do?
June was gone, and now it was up to everyone else to keep that vision alive at Casey House. And in 2016, this amazing organization needed a new CEO.
I applied. Not for a second did I think I was actually going to get the job.
Well, Joanne Simons was wrong. She became the new CEO of Casey House.
And then I went running home and, oh my God, what have I done? I have no idea what I'm doing. And the first year was certainly a huge learning curve, massive. 7 years ago, I was almost paralyzed by what it felt like, that weight of responsibility.
Not only did she have to carry the weight of the legacy of June and the other co-founders, but Casey House had changed. They were no longer a hospice, they were a specialty hospital. And the people Casey House was serving had also changed since June Callwood's day.
People are experiencing not only the stigma as it relates to HIV, but also as it relates to poverty, as it relates to homelessness, as it relates to race. And Casey House still remains the same, that we continue to serve a group of people the rest of society would rather disregard and ignore.
And Joanne was being asked to bring that legacy into a new era and a new building. Casey House was moving out of 9 Huntley.
There had been 12 years worth of work before I showed up and just got to cut the ribbon. So yes, that work thankfully had been done.
The challenge was, how do you pack up all that history into a moving van? How do you make sure that when you move houses, the legacy of the founders, volunteers, staff, and clients don't get left behind?
When we moved, we held a ceremony to close the house, to close 9 Huntley, the original hospice. And the feeling of that ceremony and the days after was different than I think many of us expected, that it was a sadness that we were leaving all those that died at the original hospice behind, that it was a move from our history, from our legacy, from where we began. And many, many of the clients, but also the original participants in the forming of Casey House, felt that it was not the leaving behind, but it was going towards. And that it was a point of closure from a period of time that was devastating. And that while people still have grief over friends and family members and lovers that they've lost, that the new Casey House, the new facility, actually represented light. And that this was a very positive step in the evolution of HIV. That we were no longer a hospice, that we were now a hospital. And the first day of the move, we were serving lunch, and a long-term client of ours, I sat down with him while he was eating lunch and he just started crying. And again, I thought it was because we were leaving this well-loved home. And it was exactly the opposite. He said, "I'm so grateful that the community has done this for us. That even though we don't know all the people that have contributed to make this happen, there is love and embrace that will carry us on, right? The love that was exuded to be able to build this facility was a sign of acceptance, right? Of love, of we fought through the 80s and people are paying us mind and attention. And we're now on the front of Jarvis Street. We're not hiding in a neighborhood. We are saying we are here. This is Casey House. We are proud to be here. And we want everybody to know we're here. We are no longer hiding.
The new building is 6 times the size of the original Casey House. It's beautiful with exceptional infection and control standards. It's massive with tons of natural light and windows and this big open courtyard right in the middle. Guy Bethel, who was at one time a client with his partner Sid, was now on the board. And Guy was a huge part of bringing Casey House from 9 Huntley to its new purpose-built home.
At the top, where the cantilever and the overhang is, it's all glass. And the late afternoon sun shines through the glass and down into the... It's a long, slim courtyard in the middle of Casey House. And the concept is an embrace, because an embrace is part of giving compassion a home, which is what Casey House is all about. And it is like an inner sanctuary to protect people living with HIV who have come to Casey House from the stigma of the outside world.
On his last day on the Casey House board, Guy asked the CEO to put one item last on the agenda.
And it was the disposal of 9 Huntley Street. What do we do with it when we move into the new building? Now I'm getting emotional because Casey House could have made a lot of money selling that plot of land to a developer. But that building has meant something for the community for so long, at a critical time, and it has always been a beacon of hope and a place of acceptance and unconditional love. And I wanted to speak from a personal, very personal level about the significance of the building and how it has to remain there, stay within the community. And so what happened was the opportunity for it to pass to Fife House. Yeah, it remains part of the community.
Fife House is still in 9 Huntley, providing supportive, affordable housing to people with HIV/AIDS in the Toronto area. And Casey House is across the street in their new building. They still have June Callwood's desk with a candle that's lit every time someone dies in Casey House. They still have the quilts.
I have a quote of June Callwood's on my wall that reads, if any of you happen to see any injustice, you are no longer a spectator. You are a participant and you have an obligation to do something. So it's in front of me every day, right? And there is a weight to it, but there is a tremendous privilege to it as well. And it lightens that responsibility because there is a team of 120 people here, plus our board, plus our donors, right? We are sharing in that responsibility and we're holding people's lives in a very precious moment. And how do we ensure that they do, in fact, have the best experience possible? In the first annual report that was written about Casey House in 1988, on the very first page, it effectively says, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but it says, once AIDS is solved, Casey House will serve another disease. So in those first days of just absolute destruction of a community, that they were, even in that moment, telegraphing forward to now over 30 years later, that we must continue to evolve and serve people who need it, regardless of what the disease is.
Here's Jim, the nurse who worked at Casey House from 1988 to 2023, talking about the ongoing legacy of Casey House.
It's like this fine old antique brass vase that was put on the mantle at Casey House the very day we opened. It's sort of like it's being shined, it's being burnished all the time. You know, everyone, June kept us going through that early era. And she was kind of like the model, the symbol of Casey House, if you will. And now it's divided amongst Sonia, it's divided amongst Joanne, it's divided amongst our chief nursing officer. The fact that we will not only acknowledge stigma, but we don't turn our back away from it and just silently let it continue. And I guess my big fantasy was when I started there and I blithely said, I'll retire when AIDS is no more. And of course, that didn't happen.
In 2023, Jim Donovan retired and was awarded the Jill Sullivan Award for Excellence in Clinical Practice, an award that honors the best in HIV/AIDS nursing in Canada.
The team supported me. We all did this journey together. So as far as I'm concerned, Jill Sullivan belongs to everybody that works over there. People should know, people in the community, the wider community should know Casey House, rather than just sort of this vague idea that, oh yeah, well, that's where people with AIDS go to die.
My personal belief is it galvanized the community, made it even stronger to fight for an extension of personal rights and freedom, same-sex spousal benefits, same-sex marriage. I think those things came faster because of the community's cohesion having to fight this terrible virus. That's a positive takeaway. I try and to see some good in a terrible, challenging time. It's lovely to see younger members of the LGBT community not have to deal with what we dealt with. And so many more rights and freedoms that came out of that. That's a treasure to me. And to see, you know, an open-minded, progressive, tolerant, accepting message, you know, carry on.
There's this recurring theme that people have expressed after interacting with June or Casey House or both. That theme is, what are you giving back to the world? Whether it was to a single person or a whole community, all of these people gave so much. June gave so much. Jim gave so much. Guy gave so much. I think a lot about how bummed I am that I never got to meet June Colwood. But it's all made me reflect on the fact that there are other June Colwoods out there. I want to find the June Colwoods of today. Their work will look different. The reception to their work will look different. But I know there are people out there making huge contributions. Instead of just seeing problems around them, these are people who say, I'm going to do something. And it makes me think, I could be doing so much more. It actually, spoiler alert, makes me think of the final lines of my play, Casey and Diana. Living is inhaling. Death is an exhale. Death is giving. At the end of the day, the only thing that lasts here is what you've contributed, what you've given, what you have left behind. The people at Casey House have contributed a dignified, good death to a lot of people, and they continue to contribute dignity, care, support, and love to people impacted by HIV and AIDS. It's been a total honor and privilege to learn more about their story, and I hope that you have been as moved and inspired as I have. This series was written and produced by Pippa Johnstone for Soul Pepper Theatre with the support of Casey House. Original music by Nathan Howe. Thank you so much to all the incredible people who spoke to us for this podcast. To Lisa McDonald at Casey House and Rohan Kulkarni and AJ Patel at Soul Pepper. And thank you for listening.